Excess number 27267, Mr. Frank Love, Reel 3. You were telling me about the first time you had hammocks. I should have picked that up. Tell me about that.
Well, they try to get you used to naval routine as soon as possible. And so one of the first things they issued you with your kit, is a hammock and the strings to attach to it and your mattress and one blanket. And fortunately, they had in the gymnasium, they had steel bars that they used to rig up that were about 4 foot from the ground, and you slung your hammocks on these. And first of all, you had to learn how to tie the strings in your hammock to get them right so that you don't fall out of them, and so that it was comfortable to sleep in. And I think it was the first 3 weeks or a month we had to sleep in those hammocks to get used to how to sleep in a hammock on board ship.
And how did you find him?
Ah, the first couple of nights it was horrendous, because if you haven't got the strings tied in the right place, the hammock comes too flat and you tip out. Getting in the things was quite a a performance, but it's surprising how you can get used to them. And once you're in a hammock, you only need one blanket and it is quite comfortable. That is why whenever you left to go into barracks or anywhere, you always took your hammock with you, but you always get issued with extra blankets because you needed them in a bunk, whereas you didn't need them in a hammock. That's one thing you never ever got separated from, your hammock. You always took it with you wherever you went. No one's ever allowed to use your hammock. It was a criminal offence to let anyone use your hammock.
Now, what about your instructors? What were they like? Both the sort of drill and PT instructors, but also your signal instructors. What were they like as instructors? Were they good? Were they sympathetic? What were they like?
I found them very good. I never had anything to complain about the signal instructors. The only thing I ever got called up on, one day somebody asked if, when they had some parade, if anybody was interested in playing snooker or billiards. I'd never really played it in my life, but only went at the Home Guard where they had one there. But so I said, put my hand up, and they said, right, the first 12, I want you, I've got a billiard table I want moving. A full-size one. Which taught me not to volunteer in future.
Were they sympathetic? I mean, did they know this stuff? Were they good, the signal instructors?
Yes. Yeah, they were good.
And what about the discipline ones? You know, the people like the drill instructors, the PT instructors. Was there a lot of shouting and bawling, or was it...
Yeah, you did get that, but then you expected that. I mean, I suppose one of the first things really I came across, I was on parade ground one morning, and one thing you're taught is the bugle calls. And one bugle call was out pipes. And I'm standing on the side of the parade ground, because you was not allowed to walk on the parade ground until you've got the full in call. And the bugle call went up out pipes, and I'm still standing there smoking. And the PO came up to me. He says, did you hear that last pipe? So I said, yes. He said, what was it? I said, out pipes. He said, so what are you doing? I said, I'm smoking my cigarette. I thought he was going to knock my head off my shoulders. I didn't realise it meant cigarettes as well. It just shows you how naive you can be. But you learn these things as you go on. Talking about culture shocks, I think we one of the lads in our lot that really found life difficult or strange. It was a fellow that used to live on the Scilly Isles.
Tell me about him. What did he find difficult?
Oh, first of all, he couldn't get used to all the crowds of people around him. He and I formed a great friendship. And when we first got our leave, it was no use him going on leave, because the time it would take him to get to the Scilly Isles, it wouldn't be worth his while. So I brought him home with me to London, and I remember getting off the train. I don't know where we were, one of the big main stations, and he came out there and he put his hands over his ears. I can't believe it, the amount of people and the traffic. He just could not believe it. He'd never seen it in his life. He'd never been on the mainland. And it was quite, as I say, in them days, none of us moved very far from our own territory, did we?
Well, he was your special pal, was he? Yeah. Or was he, were there several you hung around with?
I think I had three there. Les Pearson, Jock McKay, they were both from up north. One come from Sunderland, and the other one came from somewhere up in Lancashire. And we formed up as a great team, the four of us. We used to go quite a lot of places together.
Now, what about preparing for kit inspections, you know, and room inspections? How much of a palaver was that?
It was when you were in barracks. You had to... We didn't get it too frequently, thank goodness. Because there again, we'd all got our new kit, so it wasn't too much of a problem. Later in life in the Navy, it did become a problem. But it wasn't too arduous. They were quite lenient on us there. I didn't find the training too difficult.
What about things like, did you mind the spit and polish, polishing your boots, things like that, you know?
No, I think you took a pride in your uniform. I certainly did anyway. There wasn't too much problem as regards that.
Now, how were you assessed at the end of you know, you were there quite a while, you know, you were there till May 43. How were you assessed?
You used to get periodic tests on your advancement, you know, on how you'd... You used to take examinations from time to time. Or is it somewhere down there? Not on there, it must be on one.
It doesn't matter. I mean,
I've got there. Yeah,
they can't see it, remember.
You'd got you had to achieve certain percentages. You know, for each type of thing. It's not on there, but I've got another paper over there that gives you the percentages you've got to find. No, it's not on there, is it?
No, that's the
different
the,
ships.
That's your service sheet.
Yeah, but you had to, for each semaphore, radio, all the different types of things, you had to achieve certain percentages. And I got on my final papers there, recommended for early advancement to signalman, you know, from ordinary signalman to signalman, providing I passed the necessary exam.
And was there a passing out parade or anything like that at the end of it, or was it just a posting?
No, just a posting after that. And from there, from the signal school, you got sent to...
You seem to have spent a month in Drake itself. You remember that?
I think possibly... No, what the, HMS Drake, from when you finished your signal school, you got then sent to the signal base, which wasn't, it was under HMS Drake, but it was actually, what was the name of the camp, Gwen? Can't remember.
Doesn't matter.
It was a nudist camp in peacetime, on the edge of Glen Holt camp, it was called.
Glen
Holt. It was on the... Near Yelverton, right on the edge of Dartmoor.
And what were you doing there?
Well, that was a base camp for all signalmen and coders and telegraphists awaiting posting. And, of course, while you was there, you were continuing training all the time. If you weren't on some other duty, you were continuing training. And it was there that I first got my posting. Having said that, I was recommended for small ships. My first posting was to HMS Slinger, which was an aircraft carrier. And then this posting for HMS Hillary came up, and so I got transferred to that.
So you never went to the Slinger?
I never went to the Slinger.
So where was HMS Hillary when you joined her?
At Troon in Scotland.
And you joined her, let's have a look, you joined her, 12th of June 1943, according to this, June 1943 anyway.
What normally happens is a ship is crewed from one depot. You know, you had the three depots, didn't you? Chatham, Devonport and Portsmouth. But with HMS Hillary, they crewed that from the three depots for the simple reason they took so many communication ratings. We carried about 150 communication ratings. And so rather than denude one depot, we had communication ratings from three different depots.
Now, can you explain what type of ship HMS Hillary was? Because it was a specialist ship, wasn't it? I mean, that's why they had all these communications.
That's right.
Can you explain exactly what HMS Hillary was?
It was at that time, Lord Louis Mountbatten was chief of combined operations, and this was a brainchild of his. He wanted headquarters ships that could take over a complete section of an invasion, and they would control everything from that particular ship. There were three ships. They were HMS Hillary, HMS Largs, and HMS Bilolo. They were the three ships. And the Hillary was an old ship. I can't remember her tonnage now, somewhere in about 12,000 ton. A ship of the Booth line that used to run from Liverpool up to the Amazon. That was a normal peacetime route.
And had she been much adapted?
Yep. We had, prior to her coming to headquarters ship landing, she'd been used as an armed merchant cruiser for a short while in the Atlantic. She had a 6-inch gun on her stern and 6 oilskin guns, and they tried to, we had no armament on board, you know, so around the upper deck, the cabins, the wheelhouse and so forth, they put timber, about an inch thick timber, behind that was about an inch and a half of pitch and stones, that was around, and what with that and the guns, it was a bit top heavy, and so we had 50 ton of beetroot in our keel as ballast, and two decks that were filled with empty oil drums for flotation purposes. Our 6-inch gun, we only tried to fire once. We fired one shell and caused so much damage to the ship, we never done it again. The only way we could load the gun, the magazine was directly behind the gun, and we had to direct it directly astern, open the magazine door to load it. We only ever fired that once. We also carried depth charges, which once again we couldn't use because we couldn't go fast enough. So it was a quite Heath Robinson contraption, that ship was. But for communication, you know, we used to manage something like about 30 or 40 radio wavelengths when we were in full use. But of course, at sea we were in radio silence. But we were kept well busy in other forms of signalling all the time.
So tell me about the... what were your first impressions when you joined the ship then? You joined her at Troon in Scotland.
That's right. We were overcrowded, very overcrowded. In fact, the visual signalman's mess deck was on the forward well deck. Appeared strange to us. We had a lot of people on board that was known as T124X ratings. What they were was merchant seamen or petty criminals that were given the option of serving abroad, of serving in the Navy or doing their time in Clink. They was treated as merchant seamen, although they had to wear a naval uniform because they was on the naval ship. They didn't come under the same regulations as us. If they committed a felony, they used to get a fine. They used to get merchant seamen's pay, which was about 3 times as much as us. They had cabins with bunks, whereas we had to sleep in hammocks. And for instance, I can remember one occasion we were coming back from the kitchens of the galley with our food. We used to collect it in a tray, take it down to the mess. And one of these ratings was in front of me, and the officer of the day says to him, "What do you think of your meal today?" "That much," he said, and he slung the lot over him. He got fined £10. If it had been us, we'd have got put in prison. But that was the type of thing. there was forever what they call a warrant being called. That's when a person's being put on a charge. And this happened time and time again, where all the crew are assembled on the upper deck while the warrant is read. And it was always one of these creatures for some felony. Either he's stolen a car ashore, or he'd done some other thing. And they always used to get fined a day's wages or something like that.
So they were there. Now, tell me what the mess deck was like. Can you describe it as best you can, what it was like on the mess deck? Because people can't picture them now.
No, no.
I know you can, but they can't.
Yeah. Well, water was one of our big problems. Fresh water on board the Hillary. We did have on our mess deck down there, if I could imagine it, it was about 15 feet wide by about 40, 45 foot long. And you had the mess deck tables there that used to take up nearly all the floor space. Along the sides you had a bench seat, which was your locker space. You lifted up the top and put all your things in there. And hooks above all the tables, of course, for your hammocks. There wasn't sufficient room for all the hammocks down in the mess deck, so I was allocated a couple of hammock hooks under one of the forward oiling guns, which was all right in fine weather, but not very nice when it was a bit rough. Fortunately, most of the time, some was on watch, and so therefore there was room down there. They could take their hammocks down and you use their place. But it was very, very,
so very crowded.
Very crowded. Washing facilities were up on the upper deck.
What were they?
It consisted of a couple of vessels I'm describing. It was like these old butler sinks, yellow butler sinks. You know the old things? To do your washing, and that washing was always done in a galvanised bucket. And you had to dry.
You mean washing yourself, washing your clothes?
Washing your clothes was done in a galvanised bucket. And being as I was one of the youngest members aboard in the signal branch, we had two signal officers. And so they gave me the job of doing their dobying in my spare time, of which they paid me 5 shillings a month.
So how would you wash them? I mean, just explain what you did, because it's in a, you had a bucket.
Yeah, you had a bucket, and you had some hot water there, up there, hot water, and you're scrubbing it with a scrubbing brush in a bucket, and then drying it. If you could coax the engineers to let you hang some down in the engine room to dry, of course you wasn't allowed to dry it on the upper deck, and get in their good books. And then, of course, I had to bring the officer's stuff back and iron it, and they had an iron in their cabin, so I could use it in there. But I got shot of that job as soon as I got a younger signalman aboard, as you can imagine. One of the officers always paid up regularly, the other 5 shillings, but the other one, I always had to keep chasing him for it.
Now, what about the heads? What were they like?
They were, as far as I can remember, they were okay on the Hillary. We did have, because we had so many people aboard, because we used to carry bunks as well, troops as well, that on the upper deck, I suppose, near the rear end of the ship, there was what I suppose used to be the main staircase down, you know, when it was a liner. There they put two zinc troughs around the either side there that were urinals, so they were open urinals for everybody to use. So it didn't cloud up the heads too much, you know, but they was all right on board. We did have one really obnoxious creature. He was a leading signal, and that we all objected to. He always used to walk around in the nude down in the mess deck that we also used to complain about, and we didn't like him very much, and I've got a story to tell about him, but I don't know if it's suitable for tape.
Well, no, we don't care at all. It's not the sort of thing that
makes
children.
It's the sort of thing that he always used to go around in the nude. And one of the things, when we had a lot of washing to do, we had one of these tin enamel baby baths, you know, the small baby. And he'd been up there one day doing his dobying. And one thing we always used to object to is whenever he went ashore, he always used to come back, you know. He was a married man claiming how many women he'd managed to tick off on his trip ashore. And I know on this particular day he'd been up there doing his dobying, and there was a bit of a swell on. And apparently he'd been up there, and when the ship rolled once, up went the bath, and when it came down, it came right on the top of his John Thomas. And he finished up the next month with wads and wads. It couldn't have happened to a nicer bloke. We was all in hysterics over it, and for about a month he was wrapped up like a mummy. As I say, it cured him of a lot of his excesses, I think.
What was the food system, you know? I mean, the canteen, or the messing system, sorry.
It was a coal-burning ship, and all the cooking was done by on coal stoves. We used to go down to the galley and collect our meals in a big tray and bring it down to the mess where it was served out by the leading hands or whoever was...
So it's general messing. You didn't general prepare messing. The food?
No, not on board there.
And what was the food there. Like?
It was quite reasonable. I had no real complaints about the food apart from the bread. We never ever baked any fresh bread on board. And we only had the bread we carried with us. And in the long run, as you can imagine, you used to go and cut it, and all the weevils would break, run out of it. And you complained to the MO about it. He said, well, don't worry about it. It's added protein. And if you bang the bread, you'll get rid of most of them before you eat it anyway. The only worrying thing was that sometimes you'd go to pick up a loaf of bread and you'd find you'd just got an empty crust because the rats had been at it and the thing was hollow. And you just got the crust. But we soon ran out of bread, and after that we used to have rice instead, plates of rice all the time. But as I say, fresh water was
out. Now, what was the problem with water?
Well, we only had the water we could carry. We did have a, what, a salination plant? We know, a desalination plant or plant on the mess deck that was completely furred up, that you could never ever get any drop of water out of it. You'd wait there for a week and you'd get about an inch of water out of it. So it did mean that sometimes we were rationed for water, especially after Sicily, when we came from Sicily, we were rationed for water there.
And we'll probably come back to that, yeah. But there was a water problem, you know.
Oh, yeah, there always was.
Now, take us through where you worked on the ship. You know, that side of things. Where were you? As a fairly junior signaller at the time.
I used to work on the flag deck. That was, he used to do a 4-hour watch on the flag deck.
Now, what were your duties on the flag deck?
Well, they were for, what you've got to realise when you've got a flag signal, light signal, if it's a short signal, okay, you remember it. And you write it down after you've taken it because you can't take your eyes off. If you've got a long signal, you get somebody... If the signal at the other end is bright enough, he tells you, long signal, and you get somebody, you call over somebody, like myself, a junior signalman, to write it down. Other than that, you were there taking signals. So it was useful in that respect. You certainly got used to taking the signals and receiving them. You got used to the different abbreviations you used to get. And it was then that I realised I was lucky not to be on a small ship, because on there you had to do the lot yourself. You never had anybody to back you up. Whereas on board us, we had, apart from the leading signalman, we had four yeomen of signals, and one chief yeoman of signals, and also a signal bosun, apart from the two signal officers. And one of our yeomen of signals was Ted Briggs, who was one of the sole survivors off their hood. And unfortunately, he was not particularly liked by the other yeomen, for the simple reason that when he came off the hood, he got admiralty made up to yeoman as sort of compensation for being sunk. And because he was admiralty made up, it means that he couldn't be downranked by anybody. and he'd got this rank of sick yeoman without having to pass the necessary exams. Although he was very good at his job, he finished up as
so good. There was a bit of jealousy there.
There was a little bit of jealousy there as regards
what
that.
What was he like?
He was a great character. I always got on with him. He had to wear a full set of, a beard, because of a skin infection he got after, I suppose it's a shock that he got. He had a skin infection, so he grew a beard. But I always got on quite well with Ted. He always treated me well, at any rate.
So you do 4 hours on the flag deck,
yeah.
And then did you have any other duties? As a signaller, was it just 4 hours on, 4 hours off, or what was the system?
Normally, you worked a three-hour shift, a three-switch shift, which meant you used to get the forenoon watch.
This is the watch system, yeah. Tell us about that, then.
You get the forenoon watch, which is 4 hours. You get the afternoon watch, which took you from midday to 4 o'clock. And then you get two dog watches. The first dog, which was 2 hours. The second dog, which was 2 hours. And then you got the first watch, which is 4 hours, which was from 8 till midnight. And then the middle, which was from midnight till 8 in the morning. Now, the reason for this is because when you've done three watches, you know, three alternating watches, it swapped you around each day. That two-hour watch swapped you around. So if you've done a morning one day, you do the afternoon the next. And that's how it worked. But when you was in action stations, you used to work 4 hours on and 4 hours off all the time.
Your action station was on the flag deck?
Yep.
Now, did you have a cruising station as well, or was that on the flag deck?
That was on the flag deck.
Did you have any other duties other than on the flag deck?
No.
No. So what would you spend the rest of your time doing when you weren't on duty? I mean, was it just sleeping, or what was it?
Well, in the Navy, you never get time off. What they always do, if you've got time off, they say it's make and mend.
What was make and mend?
Well, it's ideally to keep your kit up to scratch. But the time was your own. At the most you ever got off when you was on the 3 hour, it was 8 hours off. And when you realise this has got to take up with your sleeping and your feeding, and when you was on action stations, 4 hours on and 4 hours off, this becomes, after a week or so, this becomes very tedious, because in that 4 hours off, you've got to find time to clean yourself, you've got to find time to sleep, you've got to have time to feed, which, as you can imagine, you never get any length of rest at all, do you, in 4 hours.
So was there a real problem with fatigue?
As I say, when you're at action stations, you're so busy that you don't... You did get tired at the end of it, as you can imagine. You did get weary. In fact, I can remember walking around the flag deck and falling asleep and hitting the deck end with me, banging my head, when I was walking in my sleep, when I was on a night watch.